Hello, my friends, and welcome back to the podcast. My name is Mike Mayer. I'm going to be your breathwork coach and host of this breathcast. And today's guest is the wonderful Kat McElveen. Kat's got a really wonderful journey into breathwork. So she's a healer, breathwork instructor. She went to India on her journey. She uses a lot of ancient techniques, and she's incredibly knowledgeable about these ancient breathing practices and techniques. So we go really deep because a lot of this stuff is very new to me. You know, I've gone down the science route and I've done the Wim Hof route and, you know, Oxygen Advantage, but still not gone that deep into the ancient stuff, really keen to learn more. And Kat's one of these people that's just like, she's got all this information. So you're going to get a lot of value from today's breathcast. Now, one of the reasons Kat is on here, a very important reason, is Kat is one of my colleagues on my new BreathSource app, The BreathSource. The link is down below. It is free to get started. If you've not even downloaded it, where have you been? You're into breathwork. Oh my God, the app is down below. You can get started. It is full. It is full of different breathwork instructors practicing different modalities of breathwork. So you may come there because of me, and then you might find Kat, or you might find Jesse Coomer, or you might find Michael Biker, or Dan Vadnay. Each of these breathwork instructors has their own unique take on breathwork. And I think that's what a lot of breathwork is what instructors and teachers do you resonate with. And I resonated with Wim back in the day. I resonated with Patrick and a whole host of other beautiful practitioners that I've had on my podcast that you may have seen in the past. And so you get an Insta app and it goes deep. So you've got different classes, you've got live classes, you've got retreats, you've got teacher training. There's a shop where you can get discounts on the products that we've tested. And this is very much our app. So we've built this app along with Josh and Travis, who were the real initiators of it. And all these podcasts are here so you can get to meet Josh and Travis. Everything's down in the list. And it is a wonderful, wonderful place to be. So please click on the link below. Have a look and let us know. If you hear the word breath space at any point, we were changing names at different points. So you might have breath space, it's the breath source, and the link is down below for you as well. Okay, Kat McElveen, welcome to the podcast. Let's take it away. Cheers. Okay, I have hit record. Kat McElveen, welcome to the Take a Deep Breath podcast. How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm great. I'm super excited to be on with you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, really looking forward to speaking to a fellow BreathSource colleague. I'll just leave that hanging. We'll get into that a little bit later. But no, it's really cool. I'm just really interested to know a bit more about you anyway, because I've seen you on a couple of our BreathSource meetings. And so I wanted to know a bit more about what you do. So this is the perfect opportunity to bond and have a bit of a conversation. So let's just get stuck in if that works for you.
Yeah, let's go.
Cool. So can you just share with us, like, what modalities do you teach in terms of breath work and mindfulness? Where are you on that kind of spectrum of things?
Yeah, it's such a spectrum. Even the word breath work, I think people think of as like this monolith, but it's so varied, right?
Yeah.
And so when I speak to what I teach and what modalities I teach, I sort of put it under the umbrella of Kriya and classical tantra. And so when I say tantra, I think a lot of people's minds go to like sexy, exotic, like, you know, sacred relating type things. And that's definitely got roots in classical tantra. But what I teach is based a lot more in the rituals and the devotional practices and the honestly breath-based practices that are tantra. And so out of that comes Kriya, which is this both concept and technique that works with the energy. Mm-hmm. And as you know, breath and energy are almost interchangeable. They're very, very deeply intertwined through what we look at as this life force energy or prana, as we say in the yogic tradition. So I teach these dynamic energy practices, I call them, which are Kriyas. I could speak to the concept of Kriya as well. It gets really heady, but it's a really beautiful philosophy. But basically, when we look at Kriya, we're practicing these different techniques or breathwork practices, but it's a combination of breathwork, movement, and sometimes mantra that works with specific energy signatures. So as you know, energy doesn't show up in one way in our lives. We experience all these different expressions of life force energy, intensity, clarity, anger, right? Like, and these calm, soft energies, like goddessy type energies, softness, gentleness, meditative type energies. And so when we work with Kriya, there's like, I think I may know, I don't think I teach this many, I may know like 300 different Kriyas, which are just breathwork techniques, right? And they range from super simple breath patterns to more complicated, more moving parts, right? But all of them are either evoking a certain energy within us, like maybe we're lacking in that fire in our gut, like we're feeling kind of stagnant. So we could practice these Kriyas that heat our body up, that activate our energy, that get it moving. We can also use Kriya to work with a certain energy we're experiencing that we may not want. So perhaps we want to clear some toxic like bonds that we have, some like energetic, you know, cords that we have with a situation or a person, and we want to clear that. There's Kriyas for that too. Mm. So it's this really beautiful, almost prescriptive practice. Like sometimes I speak to it with my community as like a Kriya prescription for what you're experiencing. And yeah, that's pretty much the gist of it. It's a very vast philosophy that is so beautiful, because when you don't really know what to do or figure out about what's going on in your life, well, you can always practice, right? You can always practice Kriya.
Yeah.
So that's what I teach. Yeah.
Very cool. So I'm very excited now, because I was literally, maybe because I knew we had this conversation come up, and it was in my subconscious. I think it was either today or so. I was going, I don't know what Kriya is. I really need to find out what Kriya means and stuff. So obviously this has happened. The universe has set this up for us, which is very cool. I did my first Tantra session a couple of months ago at the UK Breath Festival. I loved it, and it was, as you said, it's, you know, he said the same thing as dude. He's like, you know, a lot of people think it's related to sex, and there is that element, but we're not doing that today, you know.
Yeah.
And he was talking about it, because we're going to talk about the G word, we're going to talk about God. And I was like, oh. And so he's like this is God, and this, you know, and it was a real, and I loved it. It was great. We did a lot of stuff at the end where you're kind of staring into your partner's eyes and all that. It was a fantastic session. But I might say this wrong, Sudarshan Kriya, have you heard of this
Sudarshan
one?
Sudarshan, yeah. Okay, yeah.
I did that with, I don't know if you come across Breath with James Nestor, that book that came out. It's a really good, fantastic
I'm pretty
book.
Sure it's on my list. My reading list is very long.
Yeah, mine too, yeah. And I've got a lot of books that I've bought and haven't read yet. So I've got a list of books I want to buy and books that I buy anyway. I did that with him in Costa Rica this year, and that was very interesting.
Wow.
But I still don't know what Kriya means. So can you break that down for us? What is Kriya? How can you explain it to me in like a way that I'll get it? Because I'm like, is it like a pranayama? Does it just mean breath work? Is it something more rooted to it? So yeah, I'd love to get your interpretation of Kriya, please.
Yeah, I love this question. And I think Kriya is a word that is peppered throughout the kind of yoga world and the mindfulness space. And as you may know really well, these terms can kind of take on a life of their own. And I also think kind of through playing telephone around all these communities, the meaning can get lost. And so I'll speak to both the concept of Kriya as I understand it, as was taught by my teacher in India, and then the practice of Kriya, right? Because, and I keep coming back to yoga, right? You know, and I am a breathwork instructor, but my roots come from yoga. That's where I discovered pranayama and its effects on my life and how it changed everything for me. And so when we look at yoga, you know, there's the concept of yoga and then there's the practice of yoga. And with so many things in life, there's the concept and the practice. Because we can know something mentally, I can regurgitate the words in the book to you, but if I've never practiced and had that direct experience or gnosis within me, then I can say anything, but not actually have that lived experience of it, that true understanding of it, which is where the actual shifts take place in our life and our consciousness and our awareness. Mm-hmm.
Hey guys, real quick, if you're enjoying this conversation so far, maybe you want to click on the link below and come and join us on The Breath Source. The link is down below. You can get started on Apple and Android. All the links are down there. Click one link, get started. You might notice that at some points in these conversations, I refer to it as The Breath Space. Ignore that. We were playing with different names last year. I'm so glad we landed on The Breath Source. So The Breath Source link is down below. I will see you on it. Back on with the conversation. Cheers.
And so I'll speak to the concept of Kriya, and then we can understand it all up in our big brains. And then I'll speak to the practice, right?
Okay, perfect.
So the concept of Kriya really comes from this dichotomy between Kriya and karma. And these are big terms. I promise I'm going to make them, like, you know, also kind of simple. When we look at the concept of karma, we're looking at the concept of being bonded, right? Bondage. Into stuck patterns or repeating patterns, right? And so when we look at karma playing out in real life, this is like those habits, those ways of living, those kind of autopilot, what we call samskaras or rutted out ways of being and thinking that we're sort of in a cycle of. And those keep us in the known, right? The ever repeating known. Into our minds, that's really safe. And that's why it's so hard for people to break out of that resistance to new experiences, to practices that are going to expand us and make us change in some way, because that's really scary to that kind of primordial brainstem level of our mind. That's like, if I don't know it, it's dangerous. It means death. And so when we are in karma, we're really just stuck in these cycles. We're bonded to them. And the opposite of karma is Kriya. Okay. Mm-hmm. So there's always this moving back and forth between karma and Kriya, karma and Kriya. Are we moving more towards karma or more towards Kriya? Kriya is liberation. Kriya is evolutionary action. So whereas karmic actions are actions that we do over and over that are keeping us stuck, Kriya is evolutionary action that evolves us, that brings us out of those cycles, right? Out of the ever repeating known into maybe unfamiliar but elevated experiences. That's growth, right? That's awakening. Awakening is I am now observing from my reality from a new level of experience, from a new level of understanding. Mm-hmm. And so this brings me now into the practice piece, right? Because what are evolutionary actions? What does an evolutionary action look like? Well, it looks like, of course, making new elevated choices, but sometimes we're not really sure at the level of the mind what that is. What am I supposed to do differently to change my life? I don't know, right? And so in that place, we can actually take actions that are these techniques called Kriyas. We can do our practices. We can practice. And so Kriya, we have all these Kriyas that are these evolutionary actions that are these breath techniques, mantra techniques, movement techniques. So for instance, like pranashakti, I'm sure you've experienced this. It may be called other things as well. It's a really popular Kriya or technique, but it's like breathing and moving our arms up and down. It's a lot, you see it a lot in Kundalini, right? Mm. So that's a Kriya. And that is something that changes us at the level of mind, body, awareness, energy, that creates these shifts where we start taking evolutionary action. We start making different choices. And so when we move towards Kriya and out of karma, we're just honestly, instead of like forcing ourselves at the level of the mind to get out of these stuck kind of cycles, we're just practicing. And then it's kind of happening naturally. And it takes all the pressure off of us to have to figure it out. Right. So that's kind of how I explain, I guess, the concept of Kriya. If you want to get academic with it, you know, Kriya is just a piece of the yogic canon. It's just a part of the yogic canon. If we look at the Vedas and those original yogic scriptures, they spoke to, there's so many different like schools of yoga out there and traditions of yoga, and Kriya is just part of that. Uh-huh. kriyas and these rituals and these practices are written in the Vedas. They've been, you know, pieces and parts of kriya have been taken in many different lineages, many different teachers. And so many people have encountered kriya without knowing it.
Pretty much. And what's the difference between the definition of, say, kriya versus pranayama?
So that's an amazing question. And it's kind of like, I actually explain this as it's kind of like the mezcal tequila thing. Where,
what's that? I don't know what that means. Tequila the drink?
Yeah, yeah. So have you ever heard of mezcal?
No.
Okay, so mezcal is like very similar to tequila. It's like a liquor from Mexico, but it's a little smokier. I'm going to get this wrong. I think all tequilas are mezcals, but not all mezcals are tequila.
Okay.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So like, it's like a kriya, pranayamas and kriyas, let me say this right. Kriya involves pranayama, right? Like we use a lot of conscious control of the breath and these breath techniques in kriya. But there are many, many pranayamas that aren't a kriya practice.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So kriya is not just about the breath. Is that fair? It's the movement in there as well and the energy practice. Okay. Whereas pranayama could be more breath led.
Absolutely.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, that helps. That helps.
And I would say 80% of kriyas, I mean, we're always wanting to bring in conscious control of the breath in any practice, right?
Sure.
I would say 80% of kriyas have a specific technique with the breath, but then there's other kriyas that are just mantra.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Cool. Okay. Thank you. I'm learning a lot here. This is ace. This is really cool.
Yeah.
I've done about 75 episodes with the Breathcast now. And I keep thinking, at what point do you think, okay, I'm done? And I think the answer is probably never, because every single time you just keep learning more and more stuff, which is really cool. So thank you. Let's wind back. How have you got involved in this? This is fascinating. Where does your journey kind of link into all this?
Totally. Oh my gosh. This, like all of my life, but I can speak to a couple of main spaces where this came in. So, I have basically experienced pretty much daily anxiety for the first 25 years of my life. It feels ancestral because I don't remember a time when I wasn't anxious. Like even as like a 5-year-old child, my parents just joke about how anxious I was. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when I got into my early 20s coming out of college, I was just really effing tired of feeling that way. And I have never been someone who ever wanted to get on medication, find these like band-aid kind of fixes for something so that felt so like soul level of just anxiety and fear of life. And throughout college I had found yoga, and I'm talking about like sweaty core power kind of yoga where you're getting a good exercise, right? And I always just knew there was more. I just knew it. It was like this seed of knowing within me. I'm not even sure where it came from. Every time I would go to a yoga class, I was like, there's something really vast underneath this. I don't know what it is, but I know it's there. Like, this is not all there is to this. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why, but I want to keep coming back. And so when I was in my last year of university, I had to take like a 1-credit-hour class. Sorry, my dogs are barking.
Don't worry. Mine's downstairs and she barks every now and again. Don't worry.
Cool. Yeah. I had to take this 1-credit-hour class, right? And I was like, I'm just going to take some like PE class, physical education, just like an easy credit, right? And I saw yoga on there and I was like, cool, I'm already enrolled in classes. I'm just going to take this yoga class and like get a good stretch in every day. And I get to this class and she starts teaching us like the Bhagavad Gita and like the Upanishads and all of these philosophy, like this deep yogic philosophy. And I have never felt a more ancient remembering in my body than when we started learning that stuff. Mm. It was like, and this is the most cliche statement, but it was like everything made sense. I was mind blown. And then, as always happens with the awakening path, right? We fluctuate, right? We're that initial stage of awakening where we're fluctuating up and down. I was like, cool, that was a great summer. My mind is blown. Yoga is amazing. Now let me go back to like partying and like numbing myself and just struggling with my anxiety, right? It was part of my path. And that eventually led me to India. You know, a lot happened in between that. Just kind of general early 20s nomadic living, trying to find myself. It looked great on the outside, traveling to all these cool places, and I was still like dying inside, right? Mm-hmm. And so I go to India really impulsively. I'm like, I want to do a yoga training. I'm going to sign up for this training in Rishikesh. I signed up with like barely time to get my visa. And I was on a plane to India, to New Delhi at 24 years old. And yeah, that's where I met my teacher. That's where I met the first yoga school where I studied. And I had no idea what Kriya was. I had no idea what Kundalini was. And when I speak to Kundalini, this is not as taught by Yogi Bhajan. This is just general Kundalini activating practices that aren't, you know, part of a specific like brand. So yeah, I spent my first 6 weeks in India just having my mind blown, my worldview blasted apart, you know, all of my patterns and ways that I looked at my life and myself totally just shattered and rebuilt. Learning this practice, these Kriya practices and this lineage of classical Tantra. I never would have pursued that path if I had known that was what I was signing up for. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's my life's study, like my life's work, my life's study. So that's how I found it. And it really just opened the door. I feel like I could study this stuff for the rest of my life and only scratch the surface. So that's kind of where I got to doing it for a vocation, right?
Very cool. Wow. And so, so at 24, you're in India. And then at what point do you come back and make this like a kind of a business, or, you know, make it your career? Does that happen quite quickly after, or is there like a period of time where you're looking, what are you going to do next?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. I definitely got back from India at, you know, turned 25 and still had some growing to do, still had some coming into my, like my deserving of the life I wanted to live to do. Right. And so I definitely tried to do the normal life thing. I was like, all right, back from India, that was fun. I'm going to keep doing this as a personal practice, but it's time to go get a job. It's time to go get a car loan. It's time to go, you know, do the thing. And so I started working in corporate software, which I did for years and actually really enjoyed. It was, you know, it was interesting and I was successful at it. And I would still just like watch these YouTube people and these Instagram people who were like living their life with the freedom of their own time and teaching people their offerings, their medicine offerings, their teachings and, you know, running retreats around the world and all that stuff. And I just like, I couldn't look away. I was like so fascinated by this and by this idea. And I went back to India again, about a year and a half into my corporate life. I basically said, hey, boss, I'm taking 7 weeks unpaid off to go to India. If you still want me to work for you when I get back, I'm here. And they did. They actually gave me a promotion right before I left.
Nice.
I think to try and keep me because they could feel me slipping away. So yeah, I went back to India and that was when I kind of realized, like, what am I doing? Like, if I'm so drawn to the idea of having my own business, and I say healing business, but I've actually been trying to move away from the term healing lately. I feel like we're never truly healed. Right. And I don't heal anyone, but just business of teaching people and giving people the tools to take upon their own healing, their own growth, their own evolution. When I got back from India, I was like, I can't keep doing this. Like I'm honestly kidding myself that I'm gonna just stay in the corporate world because it's safe and it's easy. And in that moment, I decided that I'm not sure how, I'm not sure when, but I'm gonna make this my life's work. And it took another year and a half to leave, you know, as things do. Like I had planted that seed and then I trusted that it was gonna happen the way it needed to happen. I really released the like, oh my gosh, I've gotta do this. It's life or death, I need to do this. And one day I woke up and said, I'm gonna put my 2 weeks in today. And it was just that. And it's come from there and been really divinely aligned, you know?
Yeah, fantastic. You know, it took me 9 months to leave the first time because I was in the corporate world for 14 years. And I did a Tony Robbins event, actually.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I went into my boss. So that was on the, I don't know, let's say the Saturday. On the Monday, I went to my boss and said, I'm leaving, but I'm going to leave at Christmas. I'm going to go traveling. Yep. So I gave her 9 months' notice. And I was like, oh my God, I'm plagued with all this like anxiety that I'm going to never get a job again. Anyway, we went traveling for a year. And then I got sucked back into the corporate world again. So I'm still in it right now. But I'm leaving at Christmas. So it took me 3 years to get out this time. But that's it now. But so it's interesting to hear your story as well, because you do have that pressure. It's the right thing to do. Everybody else is doing it. It's normal. Yeah. And they give you all these, I heard this wonderful term called golden handcuffs. And so they give you all these benefits and you think, oh, that's amazing. Get healthcare. Anyway. So it's interesting. It's good to hear your journey because it's given me a bit more confidence for my journey, because I'll be leaving in a couple of weeks time or a couple of months time as well. So
Well, sure. And the golden handcuffs, I got chills when you said that, because when I was officially leaving like that, when I put in that 2 weeks to really leave, I got on a call with three of my superiors trying to convince me to stay.
Yeah.
And one of them said outright, you know, if you're here for a few more years, you're going to be looking at six figures.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a little moment of, oh shit, what am I doing?
Yeah.
And it was that golden handcuffs of trying to keep me. And you know, you have to really, when you make that decision, you have to decide you're going to stick with it and then hold your boundaries strong.
Yeah.
That was definitely a test of my ability to trust that what I was doing was right.
Yeah. Focus. So thing is, it's in some respects, it becomes a bit easy because when you, like, I don't know, like for you, I'm sure it's the same, but like the fact that I get to do this sort of stuff and help people and, you know, learn about stuff and then teach breathing, it's like, it's the best job in the world, you know? And so even though the golden handcuffs are really shiny, the day-to-day satisfaction I was getting was like 1% of what I was getting to do this now. So, but you have to have that trust of, anyway, it's really interesting to hear your journey. Thank you for sharing that. That's really cool. Can you just talk a bit about Tantra Cat? Because what is that? And is that part of Kriya, or is that completely separate, or was it born out of Kriya? I don't know. So how does Tantra fit into it all?
Yeah. I love talking about Tantra. I especially love talking about Tantra because I'm really passionate about, how do I want to say this? Like, clarifying some of the misunderstanding out there about Tantra. And I have some pretty passionate feels about the difference between Neo Tantra, which is these sacred sexuality practices, and they really all are based in modern times, right? Like, so that's a whole different thing than when I say Tantra. And I love educating people on this, because classical Tantra, which is really just Tantra, but I'll say classical to help differentiate it, is this incredibly vast, huge set of traditions coming out of India and Eastern practices. And you know, you hear of Buddhist Tantra as well. But I'll speak specifically to yogic Tantra. So Tantra is this ancient, I guess I would call it like almost like a religion, but it's much more of these practices and teachings that come out of ancient India. And we see Tantra first mentioned in the Puranas, which are part of the yogic canon of the Vedas, like the scriptures of yoga, in about the 7th century. So whereas yoga we're looking as far back as like 6,000 BC. Tantra comes about actually at around 7 CE, right? Or 8 CE, whatever the 7th century is. And so it's really, really, there's so much. There are so many traditions of Tantra. There's a lot of different sects, S-E-C-T-S, of Tantra. And there's also this, there's two schools of Tantra. There's non-dual Tantra and dualistic Tantra. When we hear the teachings of this is God holding my water, right? And this is God, my cell phone, and everything is God. We're looking at non-dual Tantra. Non-dual Tantra is this idea that everything is really part of this unified field of existence. And where we experience dualism or this split is when we have the perceiver and the perceived, right? And so it's this pretty heady philosophy of really all the practices in Tantra are attempting to go beyond this relativism and beyond the mind, right? Beyond the kind of filter that we experience our reality through, mm-hmm. into oneness with all that is, right? The beloved, you can call it God, you can call it beloved, you can call it all that is, you can call it the unified field, right? Universal energy, but it's really taking ourselves beyond this limited, condensed self into oneness and wholeness. Mm-hmm. And it's awareness practices. It's all practices to expand your awareness. And so that's kind of like the big inflated, like, philosophy level of Tantra, right? And there's so much more. We could do a whole series of podcasts on Tantra.
Yeah, yeah.
There's Kashmir Shaivism. There's, you know, like the Sri Vidya. Like, there's so many different traditions of it. Tantra is very practice-based. Mm-hmm. So Tantra is concerned with rituals and sadhanas, or these committed specific practices that you do for a certain amount of time that gently open your awareness, that gently unwind the stories and the small self stuff, right? To bring you into that state of expanded oneness. And so Tantra is a lot of devotional practices, you know, pujas, like waking up every morning and doing a certain set of rituals. And so to speak to where Kriya comes in, within Tantra, you have these practices that employ the breath, right? You have these specific meditations that you can do. Mm-hmm. And a lot of mantra within Tantra, mantra and Tantra, right? A lot of working with vibration, with sound vibration to evoke these effects of sadhana. And so where Kriya comes in is that you will see certain Kriyas used in certain practices within Tantra as part of those rituals, as part of those daily practices. And the last thing I'll say about it, is I know that I'm using all these fancy terms like sadhana and, you know, all that stuff, but it's really quite simple. Mm-hmm. I mean, Tantra could be as simple as waking up in the morning, lighting a candle and being with your breath. It doesn't have to be fancy. A lot of the practices are quite accessible once you find someone to teach them to you. And so it can seem like this exotic, sexy, kind of out of reach thing. But Tantra was originally taught to what we call householders in India. So Tantra wasn't for the monks who had all the time in the world in the caves to practice. Tantra was taught to the people that had day jobs or families, and they would have 2 hours in the evening to get their practice in. And so these super potent, super powerful practices were developed through Tantra to teach to people who only had a couple hours a day to practice. And so it's really beautiful. I think that's an amazing part of it, because it can sound so like cool and like far off, but it really is meant for the average person.
Cool. And what was the purpose of giving it to them? Those, I mean, first of all, when you say they've only got 2 hours, most of us haven't got 10 minutes, have we? Is the irony. Yeah. So it's like, wow, that's, you know, that's, but obviously compared to a monk, that's probably got, you know, a lot longer. What's the, first of all, is there a, does the word have a meaning? Does it mean something, Tantra? Is it, does it relate to something specific, or does it have a word rooted in like an old language?
Yeah. So Tantra has a few different translations or meanings. Mm-hmm. And one is like expansion. Mm-hmm. So Tantra is like expansion and kind of like this idea of like limitless or like never ending expansiveness, I guess. Tantra, other schools of thought or like teachings speak to Tantra meaning loom or weaving, right? Mm-hmm. So Tantra means loom. And when you actually, I'm gonna defer the definition of Tantra to Christopher Wallace, who is a really, really, he's one of the people that I study with and read a lot of his work. He's a scholar practitioner of classical Tantra. And I think he has a really beautiful description of it. So I can even find the article where he speaks to that and send it to you if you want to link it in the notes.
Yes, please. Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, beautiful. Cool. Okay, so Tantra means loom or openness or expansiveness. Maybe I've...
Yeah.
And just, again, just give me the Kriya definition or the...
Yeah, Kriya. So the concept of Kriya is like evolutionary action or moving away from bondage. Mm. Yeah.
And so karma, maybe. So for me, karma is like, oh, you did something in a past life that was bad, but there's different meanings to karma then from what I'm gathering, or there's different, or have we misunderstood it in the West and we've been using karma the wrong way the whole time? Because we say like, oh, you've got some bad karma or, you know, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely, karma has definitely been sort of, I would say, what's the word I want? Oversimplified. And now it's taken on this whole new cultural meaning in the West, right? Okay. Because we do have this saying like, oh, karma, like you do something and you immediately like, you know, have the ripple effect back to you. Mm. And that obviously has roots in the original definition, but it's not accurate. So karma, whether we're looking at past lives or not, and that's a whole different conversation, but we can look at karma just literally right here and now in our life. Karma is this acting out of the same, because we're bound by the narrowed perception of what we know. So when we're acting in the ego mind, right? When we're acting in purely just the limited perception of what we know, we are in this, we're in cycles repeating, right? And so to break karma or clear karma, we want to be working with our energy, our mind, our awareness in ways that expand us into new levels of perception, new levels of consciousness, where we are able to make the different choice. And that's what like breaking out of the bondage is, or at least the way I understand it is, you know, we've got, I really do think of it like geometrically, like we're in this loop, and to, in order to not be in the loop anymore, we have to make a different choice than the one that's been keeping us in the loop. And in order to make that choice, we have to expand like the level or the place that we're acting from. And that comes from, for me, practice, because we can't, if we're working in the known, we're not going to think up a new way to do it or a new thing that we need to be doing, or we're not going to think up a new action. But when we practice, when we work with the breath, when we work with our nervous system, when we work with our thoughts and practice meditation, we expand ourselves to be able to make that different choice. And this is starting to sound like word salad, but it just gets kind of heady.
No, it's really interesting.
But Yeah.
Don't worry if you don't know the answer to this next one, because this is a bit more, maybe not in the field that you're in, but it might be. So that's why I'm going to ask it. How does Qigong link into all this, or does it not? Is that completely different sect, completely different countries, or is that rooted in any of this sort of stuff as well?
Yeah. So all I know about Qigong is that I've taken a class before, but Qigong is, I believe, coming out of traditional Chinese energy work and
Right.
practices. And so, but like my answer to these kind of questions is whether you call it prana or chi or ki or life force energy, you're working with the same thing, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, very interesting. I could talk about this all night. We're gonna maybe we can do another one at some point next year. I'd love to get you back and talk about it. But I want us to talk a little bit, if you don't mind, about our we're essentially colleagues now, you and I, Kat. So we're very excited. So I want to talk about this very cool venture, an app called Breath Source, as in the source of breathing. I'm just curious, what made you want to work with this app and these people? What was it that drew you in?
Yeah, I'm so excited about Breath Source. I love that this whole project is happening. So I actually met Travis. So Travis is the founder, the brain behind Breath Source, because he attended one of my Kriya classes in studio before the, before the P word, the pandemic. And yeah, he just came in and I was teaching Kriya. And what's funny about in person or just any Kriya class is, I've got my regulars who are doing all the hand movements and doing all the crazy breath and they're into it. But if you get somebody who's never been in class before, I'm always kind of watching them because they're a lot of times it's looking around like, what the hell is going on here? Right? People can be a little unsure when they first experience Kriya, right? Because it's just so different from so many practices. So Travis comes in and we go into, one of the breath practices and he's like, he's going, like he's done this before, right? And he was totally comfortable in the class. And so we connected afterwards and we actually have a mutual connection that studied with my teacher. And that was, gosh, probably 3 years ago. Fast forward to a few months ago, I get a text from a random number. Hey, is this Kat? Remember I took that class at ceremony in Denver? I've got something I want to talk to you about. So that's how Travis kind of brought me in and told me about the project, and I was an immediate yes.
Oh, cool. Very cool. Oh, it's lovely to hear. People watch and listen to this. What we're doing is we are interviewing all of the different breath masters that are in this app, Breathing Source or Breath Source. And so it's really lovely, actually, Kat, to hear everybody's individual journey. And I interviewed Dan Vadinay the other day, who does the DMT breathing channel. It was really good to hear his story as well. So it's lovely to hear all of your connections because, as I've said on numerous podcasts, I've been contacted and approached by different apps in the past, and nothing ever felt right. But the minute I met Travis and the COO Josh, I was like, these are really good humans, and they're really trying to get breath work out to the world in the right way. And that's what just hooked me in straight away, just being with, and then to meet all of you has been wonderful as well. What do you think people can expect from the app, or from what you're going to be putting on there, and other people? Maybe just give people a flavor of what they can expect from yourself.
Well, overall, what I love about the app and what it kind of provides people is, breath work's obviously a buzzword now, and it's kind of all over what popular culture and like the spiritual wellness industry, I call it. And like I said, it can kind of be a monolith. Like, what does breath work even mean? And so what I'm really excited about with the app, it and what you were speaking to with all the breath masters being these incredible humans who teach these really interesting, really different forms of what boils down to breath work is, the users of the app can expect to hop on and be exposed to and learn and therefore really honor the tradition of breath work, working with the breath by actually seeing how varied it is, seeing all the different kinds, And so I'm super excited for people to, I guess, just understand breath work better by having it at their fingertips. And for whether they choose to be, paid subscribers or free users, to this level of accessibility is so important because breath work really changes people's lives. I mean, this practice really, really can create huge shifts for people. and being able to, like, you know, send your kids off to school and then sit down in your living room and practice with breath masters from around the world with all these different techniques is really, really important work. Yeah. And so, yeah. And expecting from me on the app is just to learn more about Kriya. There's so many different practices and there are so many different applications, right? You know, Kriya can help you with your anxiety. Kriya can help you with attachment, like, you know, codependency stuff. Kriya, gosh, I could speak about it all day. There's just so many applications for it. So to be exposed to some of that through the app is what they can expect from me for sure.
Yeah, well, I will absolutely be subscribing to you on the app and following your journey, because this is an area that I'm fascinated in. The whole, since I did I say it wrong, I'm sure, the Sudarshan Kriya, when I did that, I loved it. Well, just on that, in that recording that I was practicing with, that was in Costa Rica, the person was going so hum. I think they're saying so hum. Does that translate to anything?
Yeah, so hum is really beautiful because it's almost like it's such a simple mantra, and it really allows you to be in meditation with something for your mind to kind of like latch onto. So hum means I am that. Mm. And it kind of speaks to what we were speaking of earlier, which is that non-duality of Tantra, which is that the only thing that is creating relativism in the world is the perceiver and the perceived. Really, we're all one. Mm-hmm. And so I am that. So mm-hmm. I am, that statement is I am. I am a singular being distilled out of this wholeness. But I am that, also the wholeness.
Yeah. Yeah. I think about that a lot. You know, I was thinking the other day about, like, you know, when people hurt other people, you're the person being hurt and the person hurting. It's all, we're all one, aren't we? And it's all an expression of us, you know. Anyway, it was just a random thought as I was walking my dog through the forest, but just this thing around, we're all the same. And so we're the person that's being hurt. Anyway, that was just all connected. Cool. Okay. I've loved that. That's been fantastic. I've got a couple of like quick fire questions for you at the end. It's like a little segment I've got, a little bit cheesy, but bear with me. My light has also died. That's why I look really dark here. So anyway, don't matter, technical issues. What is one book you'd recommend for people to go out there and read?
Gosh, my bookshelf is pretty stacked.
You can name a couple. You know.
Yeah. Let's see. So one book, I'm going to bring it back to like the book that kind of changed it all for me. And whether you're somebody who's been practicing yoga forever, or whether you're just starting out with this whole world of like mindfulness and meditation. And because for me, really, that's what breath work is rooted in. Like, yes, I teach breath work, but it all comes back to getting yourself into a state of meditation. The Wisdom of Yoga by Stephen Cope is what really changed it all for me in terms of understanding like the way our minds kind of play tricks on us and create this filtered reality, and really how that causes suffering for us. And then The Way Out, which is practicing, right? Practicing mindfulness. That book is definitely more centered in yoga, but oh, it's fascinating. I really recommend it.
Okay, I've made a note of it. I will be checking that out after this, and I'll link it for people down below. This one's a bit cheesy, so bear with me. If you're stuck on a desert island, you can bring one breathing exercise or one Kriya or one Tantra with you. What would that be?
Oh, gosh. Okay. You know, I'm going to go back to basics. My tried and true. One second, I'm getting a call. My tried and true is four-part breath. Call it box breath or like 16 count breath. I'm sure you know it. It's inhale, hold, exhale, hold. Mm-hmm. No matter where you are, what you're doing, what you need, that one's perfect.
Oh, cool. Yeah, first time I've heard about box breathing as the desert one. I like that. Yeah, because it can be overlooked sometimes as being a bit too simplistic, but actually that's not the case at all, is it? It's very powerful
Yeah.
breathing technique. And do you play with that at all? Do you like slow it down? Do you do 4-4-4-4? Or do you go longer? How do you use that?
Yeah. So the way I teach it and the way I was taught from my teacher is as long as you keep the four parts equal, you can stretch that out to really long holds. And this is why this breath technique is actually so powerful because it's a good way to play with your lung capacity. So I start people off with four, 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 and four. So that would look like hold for four and then exhale for four. So you're having to actually control the exhale to make it slower and not just kind of releasing your breath. But I've worked myself up at times to like 12, 12, 12, and 12, maybe even farther. As long as you just keep them all equal, you can really stretch it out.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool. Last question. What does breath work mean to you?
That's funny. I had this kept dropping in for me before we recorded this. And so I think my like, whatever you want to call it, higher self, my wisdom was telling me you were going to ask me this question. The way we breathe is like the way we live. I mean, the pace of our breath equals the pace of our life. When we're holding our breath, when we're breathing shallowly, we're living in this state of suspension and we're not dropped in, right? When we're not in touch with our breath, we're not present. And so the substrate for just the pure experience of our life is how we're breathing. I mean, it comes back to that. And when we don't have our breath, we don't have living. And so breath work to me, yeah, beyond all the techniques, beyond all the amazing teachers, beyond all the cool ways we can do it, is being conscious of your breath is really all you need to be living a conscious life. So I think that's what it means to
Lovely.
me.
I love that. Yeah, that's fantastic. Thank you. Really, really beautiful way to end us off. Kat, it's been a real absolute bloody pleasure talking to you. I've really enjoyed that and I've learned so much, and I'm sure everybody else has. And I'd love to do another one of these and just go deeper and deeper, because you're a fountain of kriya and tantra knowledge. And I feel like we've
You.
just scratched the surface today. So very, very cool. Where can people find you if they want to do more?
Yeah, so I hang out a lot on Instagram. Instagram is where you'll find like quick little free practices and where you can kind of hop on my email list from and everything. So it's a good jumping off point.
Cool. Okay. So we'll link all that down below. So everyone watching, listening, you can go in the notes and you can find Kat's Instagram, and also you can find the link to get yourself signed up to Breath Source, which is the app for breathing that both me and Kat and many other wonderful practitioners are going to be on. So make sure you get signed up for that. Kat, any final words before we close off?
Your questions were pretty amazing. I feel like I said everything I want to say, but thank you so much for having me on. This was really
It's
fun.
been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on. Wonderful. All right. Well, thank you. And thank you, everyone, for watching and listening. We'll see you on the next Breathcast. Cheers. Cheers, Kat.
Thanks.
I hope you enjoyed that podcast episode. I need you to do just one thing for me. If you got any value from the episode, please click on the link in the show notes or down below in the video description and go on over to the Breath Source. Come and join me on the Breath Source app. Me and all these other wonderful breathwork instructors, you can get started for free today. We have put our life, our heart, our soul into this app. There's retreats in there you can go on, there's teacher training, there's every breathing exercise you can think of, all taught by their own breathwork instructors with our own flavors and modalities and training and experiences. Come for me and find Jesse or find Kat or find Travis or find one of these wonderful human beings in there and come and play with the breath with us. So the link is down below. I hope to see you on there. This podcast, the Breathcast, is also in there. Ed Harold's Life with Breath podcast is also in there as well. So we want to make a place for you where you can find our breathing exercises that are on YouTube, as well as new stuff, as well as live stuff, as well as new breath friends, a real community, a real hub for breathing. So I'm so excited about this. I cannot wait to see you in the app. The link is down below. And I will see you over on the Breath Source in 2 seconds. I'm going to hold my breath and I'm going to wait for you. Go click on the link. Have you clicked it yet? Hurry up. Please. See you on the breath source. Cheers.